The United States is the only developed country in the world without some kind of paid family leave. The documentary 0 Weeks makes a forceful argument about why that needs to change. It'll be shown at the Guild in Albuquerque on July 15th at 1 p.m. The event is organized by Moms Rising and the New Mexico Breastfeeding Task Force. 0 Weeks features stories of ordinary working Americans struggling to take care of themselves and their families. It also explores the work of Ellen Bravo, co-director of Family Values at Work, which is working to enact paid family leave around the country. Ellen Bravo, thank you for joining us on Women's Focus.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Talk a little bit about what your organization is doing around paid family leave.
We are a network of coalitions in 27 states that are working for policies like paid family and medical leave and also earned sick days. And we have won 49 victories in affecting more than 44 million people over the last 15 years. It's very exciting. Six of those wins are paid family and medical leave. So California, New Jersey, Rhode Island, New York, D.C., Washington State. And there are a number more states that are on the cusp in the next year and a half or so of winning. And our goal is to build a critical mass so that we can get a national bill. We're not trying to do 50 states. We know that there are many states that will never be able to do this. But we are creating the model and the movement to pave the way for a national win.
What does paid family leave or lack of it look like right now in the United States?
Nearly 1 in 4 employed women who are pregnant go back to work within 2 weeks. Shocking statistic. Should have been a games changer the minute that got published. It means there are many children in the hospital alone because their parents would lose their job or their income if they were by their side while they're getting poked and prodded. It means that there are people who, because they insist on being at their mother's or father's bedside in their last days, go into debt. It means that people go back to work too soon and don't heal, all kinds of things. It's bad for families. It's certainly bad for businesses because of the turnover that it leads to, and people without income to be customers. The good news of what it looks like is it's not pie in the sky. It exists. We know what it looks like in our own country as well as the entire rest of the world except for one other, Papua New Guinea.
We and Papua New Guinea are the only countries without paid family leave.
The United States of America and Papua New Guinea are the only two countries in the world without any paid leave. If you go to zeroweeks.com, it's the website of a new movie about a documentary about the lack of paid leave, the cost of doing nothing, and the movement to change it. You'll see the map that shows the, it's a great map, what every other country has except for us in Papua New Guinea. The good news is we know what it looks like and we know how it works, and it's pooling small amounts into a social insurance fund that people can then draw a significant percent of their wages while they're out either welcoming a new child or caring for a serious personal or family illness.
Talk about the mechanics of how that works, because businesses, for instance, we had a failed attempt to have a sick leave ordinance in Albuquerque. There's a lot of pushback from businesses. So how do you get buy-in? How does this work?
So let's just be clear on the difference between the two policies. Sick days, every one of us, every year, certainly all of our kids, get something, colds, flus, ear infections, strep throat, that you need not to be around other people and you need to get better. The government makes announcements when the flu is out. Do not go have your child in school. Do not go to work. We need you to do this. And yet for many people, following doctor's orders will mean risking their pay and even their job. That's a small, modest thing that employers can afford to do. That's paid sick days. Occasionally, each of us needs extended leave to welcome a new child or to deal with a serious illness. And that's paid family and medical leave. We do not expect employers to provide that. We appreciate it when they do, and particularly big companies that can afford it. But the majority of companies are small, and they cannot afford it, unlike paid sick days. And that's why a social insurance fund is the only way to guarantee it for everyone. Also, people leave jobs and go move on. And the only way to make sure that no matter where you work, you are covered is for the government to create this pool that's self-sustaining because it comes from small contributions, mainly from employees, in some places also from employers.
Is that how these have been funded? It's taken as like a payroll deduction?
Yeah, exactly how they're funded. And a lot of people don't realize there are five states in the U.S. that had temporary disability insurance funds since the 1940s. And that's how they worked. They took small payroll deductions. So that if people get injured or ill, not related to a workplace accident, they still can have income coming in. Unfortunately, those policies excluded pregnancy until 1978 when the law changed and saw that treating pregnant people differently was, in fact, related to gender discrimination. But they've worked. They're solvent. They help people stay attached to the workforce. The people who administer those funds in all those five states, I interviewed them 27 years ago to see if this was a model. And they all said, we have never understood why everybody didn't do this. It makes so much sense. So we've known for a long time that this was a way to do it that would work. Unfortunately, our opponents, who are, you know, corporate lobbyists who have kind of a knee-jerk reaction, just don't tell business what to do no matter what it means, even if it saves them money, have spread a lot of disinformation. So let's take the Albuquerque paid sick days. That was the Koch brothers and the Restaurant Association trying to, first of all, fool people into thinking it was a bad thing. We've won in 43 jurisdictions. Not one business has gone out of business because of paid sick days. And in fact, every one of our coalitions has business partners, especially small businesses, who say, either I already do this when it comes to earned sick days because it's the smart as well as the right thing to do, but I want everyone to do it because I want a level playing field, but also I want it for my customers because if they don't have money in their pocket because their kid got sick or they got the flu, they don't come to my shop, my store, my restaurant, whatever. On paid family and medical leave, businesses are our partners, small businesses in particular, because they can't do it on their own. And this is the way they can compete with the big boys. But it's also, they want their employees. They may know their employees' family. They want them to be there for family, but they can't afford to pay them while they're out. And this makes that possible.
What is the, is there an average sort of payroll deduction where this has been enacted?
It's a pre-tax deduction on your payroll, and it's a couple bucks a week. It's really a small amount. And what we're trying to do in the new states is have progressive wage replacement so that the lower paid workers get a higher percentage, up to 90% of their pay. That's what Washington State is going to do. Massachusetts may be the next state to win. That's what they would do. That's what Connecticut would do if they win, and so on. That's what D.C. is doing. And so we've learned that really it's hard if you're a minimum wage earner, two-thirds of your wage or half of your wage, it's just not enough. So trying to do this in a more progressive way.
You mentioned that a couple of states, they're in progress. I mean, is it usually a ballot initiative or is it a legislative action?
So far, all the states that have won paid family and medical leave have done so through legislation. Washington State was prepared to go to the ballot if they needed to, and the other people sat down with them and said, okay, we got it. We can read the polls. We see 80% approval. We understand what that means. And we also understand that you want a strong bill or you're going to go to ballot, so we will talk. Massachusetts is doing the same thing. They have collected signatures, and they will go to ballot unless they get a strong bill, but they're hopeful that they will get one. But mainly it's through legislation.
This is Women's Focus on KUNM. I'm Megan Kamrick, and I'm speaking with Ellen Bravo with Family Values at Work. She is working with coalitions around the country to get paid family leave enacted, and her efforts are featured in the film 0 Weeks, which will screen on July 15th at the Guild Cinema in Albuquerque at 1 p.m. The event is organized by Moms Rising and the New Mexico Breastfeeding Task Force. This has been a bipartisan issue for a while. Why can't
we get it done? This is a complicated question, I realize, but why are we one of the only countries in the world that doesn't have this?
I think the main reason is the role of money in politics and the role of corporate lobbyists, that they've kind of bullied their way to say to people, don't do it or you'll be sorry. And what's changing is so many people are affected by this issue. What our movement has done is to help people see, I can't do this on my own, but I can do it if I work with other people, and we have the power to change it. We have the power to change who's in power if they won't listen to us. And so I think more and more politicians are realizing this isn't just good policy, it's good politics. However, our country has become so ideologically divided and partisan that there are a lot of people who should be supporters who fear that if they were, you know, that someone would run a primary against them and so on. So what's happening in the states, like Washington State won with bipartisan support. Vermont has bipartisan support. There will be some Republicans in more states. And that eventually is going to lead to some Republicans in Congress saying, this is the right way to do it, this social insurance fund, I'm going to get on board.
I have to wonder, though, at your optimism, because as you say, we're very ideologically divided right now, and there's just a huge push to roll back a lot of the social safety net that we have right now.
Right. So I appreciate how much our movement has had to be on the defense. But at the same time, people want something positive to be working for. And that's, I think, one of the things about our movement that's been very exciting is that we're winning at a time that so many other people are hanging on or fighting these really vicious attacks, whether it be on immigration or Medicaid and healthcare and so on. The blue wave that we've seen, I think a lot of people are recognizing there's going to be significant change in November. And paid leave will be one among a number of issues that candidates run on. And if that works, I think in 2020, we will see this be a major issue in the presidential race and in many Senate and congressional races. So either those in Congress, some of them will say, I better move on this, or they won't be the Congress that's deciding it.
We have the Family Medical Leave Act. It was passed during the Clinton administration. Where does that fall short?
The Family Medical Leave Act, which was passed twice and vetoed twice by George H.W. Bush and then passed a third time and signed into law by Bill Clinton, was a great step forward because it recognizes that having a family shouldn't cost you your job. It made it gender neutral, applies to men as well as women. It recognizes that it's not just new babies that need care, but also people who are aging and people who are partners and people's own health. And it says if you take leave for these things and you can have up to 12 weeks, you get your job back and you get your insurance continued while you're out. The problem is it applies only to companies of 50 or more. To be eligible, you have to have worked on your job for at least a year. You have to work at least 25 hours a week. That leaves out 40% of the workforce. And it's unpaid. So what we now know from studies that have been done is that millions of people every year who are eligible and need it don't take it or go back too soon because they can't afford to be without a paycheck. You know, people say they care about getting people off public assistance. The lack of leave pushes people onto public assistance. If we want intended consequences like lowering infant and maternal mortality and increasing job retention and wages and breastfeeding and men being good dads and seniors being independent, all of those are the intended consequences of paid family and medical leave.
Where does the burden of not having this fall? Is it mostly falling on women and people of color, low-income folks?
Like everything else, the jobs that are least likely to have this built in are low-paid jobs, and those are disproportionately held by females and people of color. So sure. And caregiving in our society, even though there are many men who want to be good fathers and sons and husbands and partners, They get punished at work for doing it, and the culture is still working against them. So caregiving disproportionately falls on women. The good news is, in the states that have passed this, men have taken a bigger role in both caring for young children, but also caring for parents. And, you know, that it's a cultural change. In Iceland, where for years they've had a policy of, they call it 3-3-3, each parent can have up to 3 months paid leave, and then the couple, if there's a couple, can share another 3 months. So if it's a heterosexual couple, if the man doesn't take those 3 months, the family loses it. That's a good incentive for men to take it. And they've now done research that shows 3 years later, 70% of the men who took that leave are equally sharing child rearing with their partners. That policy is supposed to change to 5-5-2. So that's a great thing. And we know that that same kind of cultural transformation can happen here if we get the kind of good policy that we're working for.
Do you think most people are aware of the fact that this is not guaranteed? I mean, we supposedly live in the most fortunate country in the world. Do you think people understand this isn't guaranteed? Do you think they understand the rest of the world has this?
I know that they don't, that many, many people have no idea. And, you know, paid leave is one of those issues that until you need it, you don't think about it, and then you do, and you're surprised to find out how little is available. The person who made the film, that's what happened to her. That's why she made the film. Most people have no idea that we're at the bottom. I mean, when I had my first child in the late 70s, I have a good friend who lives in France, and she wrote me a letter saying, I feel so sorry for you that you have to have this baby in the United States. And I thought, what? I thought I was savvy and that I knew a lot already. I had no idea. And I realized that, like many people, you come to think it's just life. That's the way it is. I had no paid leave with either of my kids, and you just have to suffer through it. And, you know, then you realize, no, we don't have to just suffer through it. We can change this.
There is such a moving part in the movie. It's a young couple, and they had twins, and she went into labor early and lost them. And his work, he was in sales, basically. I mean, first the doctor said, you cannot leave her alone. Obviously, she's devastated. His workplace said, well, the policy is 3 days for death in the family, but, you know, you have six since you had two deaths. I mean, that was heart-wrenching.
It was really heart-wrenching, especially when she explains those 6 days. And she says, you know, day one, you're holding your children while they die. Day two, you wake up and live it over again, and then you go home and there are slips of a delivery of a present from his aunt and uncle from your registry. And day three, you do some kind of service to memorialize them. And day four, you have to pick out the urn. And day five, his family leaves. Day six, your family leaves. And the movie, all of the stories are really relatable. So many people can say, that could have been me. And you see the consequences in human cost, but also financially. And then you also meet a lot of business people who say, I already do it, or I want to do it, and I support this policy. And you see experts and politicians on all across the political spectrum who say the same. And then you see our movement in action winning it. So it ends with the filmmaker saying, you know, there are certain problems that are so huge, it's hard to imagine how we'll ever solve climate change and global terrorism, but this is something we can fix. And audiences absolutely respond that way. They respond by being ashamed that the United States is such an outlier, but being hopeful that this is something we have the power to fix.
What do you think about the prospects here in New Mexico for getting this done? You know, we're a fairly poor state with pretty weak economy. I'm guessing people will raise those issues like, oh, we can't do this. We can't afford to do this.
Well, the good news is that it doesn't depend on the state having lots of money because it isn't a state expenditure. It's pooling contributions and making a social insurance fund. And it, if need be, creating a mechanism for the upfront cost to set it up by having people contribute a year before it goes into effect and then using that to repay whatever you have to do to set it up. So I don't think that's the thing. This isn't about money. It's about political will and power. And so hopefully the administration after November in New Mexico will embrace the feasibility and cost effectiveness and the value of this. You know, we can't say we value families and then punish them for doing what we ask them to do. We can't say we want seniors to live with dignity and then make it impossible for them to do that. And we can't say we value young children and have their parents go back to work 2 weeks after they're born.
You have mentioned that the long-term plan is a national policy, not going to every state and getting this done. So how does that happen?
Well, the impetus for getting the national will come from the people who have wanted it in their states. And it's interesting, a number of people who've signed on to the federal bill, which is called the Family Act, did so because they saw it in their state and they saw that it worked and it makes sense. Then there are other people who say, look, they did it in that state and I need it too, and who pressure their elected officials to get on board the federal bill. So it's you know, just like anything else, it's about building momentum and power and getting elected officials to see and hear the real people whose lives are affected by the absence of this and to see the impact it will make when we do it right.
Well, Ellen Bravo, thank you so much for talking to us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Ellen Bravo is the co-director of Family Values at Work. The film 0 Weeks, which focuses on the lack of paid family leave in the United States, screens on July 15th at 1 p.m. at the Guild Cinema in Albuquerque. That event is organized by Moms Rising and the New Mexico Breastfeeding Task Force. Find out more at KUNM.org.